Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, October 19th, 2017. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I just arrived this evening in New York City. It's a lovely fall evening sweater weather. Our theme tonight is bad manners and the missing money. We're watching in Washington. I was just in Washington, D.C. for 2 days. You're seeing an incredible pylon against Trump. The goal is to get under his skin and make him erupt. And unfortunately, it's a little too easy to do. And every time you do it, you get him closer to being able to prove that he's incompetent. It's like watching the Bushkaji, which is a Afghani game. It's the precursor to polo. Two teams go at each other with horses and play for the body of a dead lamb. And the goal is that there are no rules. You're supposed to get the body of the dead lamb around the other guy's goalpost. But in the meantime, both teams ride with whips, and the goal is to whip the guy who's got the body of the dead lamb until he can't stand the pain and he drops the lamb. But that's what they're doing to Trump. And unfortunately, he's either going to have to learn how to get a thicker skin, or they're going to get him on an incompetency charge. We see Representative Sheila Jackson asserting that the 25th Amendment to the Constitution lets Congress remove incompetent presidents and suggests that the Congress use it as a tool to get rid of Trump. We see the Brookings Institute recently come out with a study of his firing of Comey and handling of Comey and saying, accusing him of being guilty of obstruction of justice, which as far as I'm concerned is a whole pile of BS. But the pylon is significant, and it says a lot about our society. So let me give you some of the examples this week. We had Biden and Kasich team up and do a whole round of criticism, some of it veiled, but of the president. Now, let me explain who former Senator Biden is. He's the guy who passed the legislation that would allow the Clinton administration to round up lots of innocent black people and put them in prison. You know, so he led the effort with the Clintons to do what I consider to be slave labor camps. He also is shown in a large collection of videos to behave inappropriately with children at swearing-in ceremonies at the Capitol. There's a lot of rumors circulating about his sexual proclivities. When he left the Senate, he got a big chair at the University of Pennsylvania. If he is a pedophile, in my experience, it's not the first one to, let alone the first Nazi, to be sheltered by an Ivy League university, particularly for their friends, you know, as a favor for their friends at the CIA. But it's disgusting to watch students struggle with student loans while someone like Biden is enjoying a very expensive chair at the University of Pennsylvania. So where does Biden get off pulling a holier-than-thou bit against Trump? Because if you look at the actual record and the facts, you know, Biden has no reason to criticize. Now, again, it gets back to which is more important, substance or manners. Not to say that good manners aren't important. I think they are. But then we have George Bush coming out, and on the same day as Obama this week, attacking the president. Now, again, it was veiled, and later other people came out and said, no, he wasn't speaking of the president. He obviously was. But one of the things he attacked was conspiracy theories and fabrications, which is very interesting, because what it tells me is that they are afraid, both Obama and Bush. They were depending on Hillary Clinton to run their air cover. Now, here's the reality. If the 9/11 truth story goes viral, then Bush and Cheney and their syndicate can have whatever portion of the $21 trillion they got, they can have it seized back. And what's interesting is if you look at all the money laundering and financial sanction laws they implemented, it means the U.S. would be able to seize all of their holdings all over the world, including their big estates in Paraguay. So again, I think the Bushes were counting on Jeb and Hillary for protection, with the Uranium One deal blowing up. now both Bush and Obama are feeling exposed. But let's look at relative merits here. Which is worse, 9/11 and the war in the Middle East, or Trump's temper and thin skin? I mean, obviously I believe 9/11 was a false flag and Bush and Cheney are deeply implicated by it. But whatever they did, they lied about starting a war in the Middle East and trillions of dollars disappeared on their watch, not to even begin to talk about the bailout. So if you look at the record of how many Americans they've killed and how much money they've stolen, you know, where do they get off criticizing Trump? It's almost like they think we don't know. You sort of wonder if they're prisoners of the official reality. Then, of course, we get to Obama, who was responsible for the largest portion of the $21 trillion missing money and $24-plus trillion of bailouts. Now, Obama has excellent manners. He's a smooth operator. But here's the reality. You have a gang of thieves, the Clintons, the Bushes, the Obama, who've been bullying us for a year to the tune of $150,000 in missing money and bailouts. So you have $65,000 in missing money, and then the bailouts are even more than that. So you add it up as $150,000. Then you've got rigged markets, negative return on investment, government, QE1, 2, 3, currency debasement. You know, you can keep adding this money, and if you look how much it is per person, we're talking about extraordinary amounts. Now, who would you rather have, a guy who was, you know, had bad manners, or somebody who stole hundreds of thousands of dollars of your money? I mean, it's really, you know, now if I have a problem with Trump, it's not his manners, it's his new dedication to the Make Israel Great Again plan since April 1st. And now we've got weather warfare in Texas and Florida, and literally firebombing occurring in California. That's all killing Americans, and he appears to be saying nothing about it. So, for one, I wish Trump was better at forging coalitions. He's clearly, because he has trouble controlling his temper, he's letting people get the better of him, and it's hurting his teamwork, and it could hurt his chances of getting the changes in tax reform and other things he wants and needs. But the reality is, if you look at what Trump has done, Bush has done, what Obama has done, what Biden has done, and you compare it to what Trump has done, where do they get the hubris in standing up and criticizing Trump? I would keep my mouth shut if I were them. But it's, here's the thing. They believe that we as a society are committed to the show and the official reality, as opposed to substance or reality. And we're going to have to decide which it's going to be. But what you're watching is the smooth operators ganging up on the bully, and they're afraid. And what they're really afraid of is that the bully is going to implode the system and put them at risk. I mean, the smooth operators have engaged in a global crime spree, killing, stealing, engineering millions of deaths. The average life expectancy of a woman my age without a high school degree has fallen 5 years since George H.W. Bush became president. And while that was going on, Biden, the Clintons, the Bushes, the Obamas got rich engineering things that have caused that falling life expectancy. So in my opinion, that's murder, because you can murder with a pen. And these people have made a lot of money murdering. And so I think what you're really watching is they're afraid if this continues that, that Trump is going to tear a hole in the wall of fake news and they're all going to be at risk. I don't know. So now let's look at what really is going on. Our choice may not be between a bully and, basically criminal enterprise. Unfortunately, our choice may be worse, because if you look at what's going on right now, we're watching unprecedented weather warfare against Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, and now we're watching firebombing in California. So our real choice may be between the guy who firebombed the World Trade Center in the Middle East and the guy who firebombed California, and weather warfare Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico. I think it's very important to understand whatever is going on in California. It's happening in U.S. airspace. The U.S. is in command. This is not Russia. This is not the Muslims. This is not the Chinese. This is not the Mexican drug cartels. This is our guys, whether it's the U.S. government or the bushy breakaways, who can act with impunity, and the U.S. military and intelligence are helpless to stop them. You take your pick, but that's one of it. Either way, I think it's probably a good idea. If you don't know about directed energy weapons, now's the time to start learning, because that's probably something like that is what they used in California. So what happens to Trump? Right now, his approval rating is low, and so an endless series of politicians can win points by being critical of him. It jeopardizes the budget deal, tax reform, and financial reform, but it is what it is. Money and markets. I want to talk first, before I go through the market, just about some of the posts we've been putting up at Solari. The first post I want to discuss is called Asking for Prayers for the People of Northern California. I can't stress to you enough how extraordinarily stressful what they're dealing with is to have something this strange and unnatural happen. And on this scale is absolutely terrifying. So one of the things we've been trying to do is post ideas of where you can send your donations. We've sent donations to three different groups, and I've put some more links up, but I would really encourage everybody to keep them in your prayers, reach out, give a donation. If you're out in that area, volunteer, do what you can do, but make a contribution. It's funny. One of the great moments of prayer was when I heard a sermon about how to pray while you're washing the dishes and doing housework. So one of the things I've learned is, you know, there's always time to pray. Cynthia McKinney has put out a new newsletter and has also put out a new function where you can contribute on a regular basis to her monthly. So I went and signed up at her website, and we posted it in topics, but you can check it out at All Things Cynthia McKinney. That's somebody very worthy of your support, so I encourage you to take a look at that. We have a new special report that we posted this week. When I was out at the Nexus conference, I was struck by how many people are naive or lack knowledge about how the U.S. government taxes cryptocurrencies. So I had one of the law firms I work with prepare a special report on the U.S. taxation policies towards cryptocurrency. If you are speculating in Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, it's extremely important that you understand what the tax ramifications are and make sure you are 100% compliant. If you look at how the Bitcoin market is trading, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, within the next 2 years, you're going to have a major number of the people in that market, in violation of IRS rules, and the IRS is going to have the data which proves that. And if they want to use it, they can. Anyway, this dovetails with the report that Harry Blaser and I did called Bitcoin the Op. And so if you listen to that, I strongly recommend you take a look at the special Solari report as well. It's called How the U.S. Federal Government Handles Taxation for Cryptocurrency. And a big major warning, do not believe that most of the transactions are anonymous. First of all, 70% or more of the people who buy Bitcoin are buying it through an exchange that has their private keys, so there's no anonymity whatsoever. But the other thing is, when you do the transactions and also move money from dollars or other currencies into Bitcoin, that's a point at which your transactions can and will be recorded. So do not think that your transactions are anonymous. I did an interview on InfoWars today and recommended a whole series of different links related to the work we've been doing on how to enforce the Constitution and why it's so important and why a constitutional convention is so bad. All those links are up together. We got had very productive meetings in Washington. it was interesting to do InfoWar on the missing money from the middle of a Washington hotel. But I had an opportunity to finally meet Dr. Mark Skidmore in person, who's been helping with the missing money documentation and digging out the information from HUD and DOD. And it was great to meet him in person. What an outstanding person and an outstanding scholar. We got one subscriber came in and said they loved the interview with Farrell for the third quarter wrap-up, part one, but they didn't understand what the rape of Russia was and would we provide some material. And I had them go back in the archives and look at the two Ann Williamson interviews on the rape of Russia in that we did on the Saleri report, but also look at her testimony. And so she was so impressed. Her name is Liberty Jones. She recorded Anne's Rape of Russia, did an audio, so we've posted that. And you can find that at Saleri, Ann Williamson's Rape of Russia, recorded by Liberty Jones. But also remember, in the second quarter wrap-up, and you can find it in Just a Taste or just do a search, we put up a section called Saleri Core Concepts, which are great introductions to terms that you might hear at Saleri, like Global 2.0 to 3.0. And if you hear one of those words, then go check it out in Saleri Core Concepts. One of the core concepts we use is what I call shadow work. Shadow work is another way of experiencing inflation where a variety of organizations and businesses basically make you do more and more work. So now you're having to check out yourself at the grocery store. You're waiting on voicemail, trying to navigate the automation for 20 minutes, on and on and on. But the work piles on and the same process takes more and more and more of your time. I call it shadow work. And so many people are now experiencing the phenomenon of shadow work that I wanted to remind you that we published a big piece on it in 2015, so I republished it on the website. Okay, let's go through the market. The dollar is continuing to hold that 92 line. It's trading at 93 and a quarter, and so but that's still down almost 9% for the year, but again, holding that $92 line, which is a very important technical line. Fixed income, TLT, long treasury, still very respectable for this year, up 17.18%. The intermediate is traded off. It's now up a little bit less than 3%. Bond aggregate up 3.36. And junk, very respectable for permanents at 6.88. The stock market just keeps going up. If you look at the technicals, it's unbelievably overbought. I'm really glad Rambus will be coming on next week with his blockbuster Chartology, or his technical work will be, he doesn't like to give audio, so we'll just have his written work. But the S&P now up 16.06%, which is quite attractive performance so far this year. The European ETF up 25.03%. Developed markets 26, Germany 26.36%, developed markets up 22%. And a quarter, the large caps in China up 31.84%, small caps 35%, emerging markets now trailing China 32.26%. Commodities were down 4.83%. Gold has recovered a little bit back up at 11.66% for the year. Silver 7.68%, and oil still in the doghouse down 15.48%. Well, the IMF and World Bank meeting in Washington for the 13th, 14th, 15th come and went. And of course, there were no great events like all the fear porn guys promised. And just once I'd like them to say, guess what, we were wrong and here's why. But of course, I don't know. You know, for the last 2 months, I've had to beat back fears about the IMF World Bank meeting. And then yet again, it goes by. No one seems to notice afterwards that, oh, that big scary thing wasn't a big scary thing. Russia has announced, talk about big scary things, Russia has announced that they're going to, Putin is given the green light to move forward with a crypto ruble. And my prediction is once they get it going, they're going to back it with gold stored in multiple countries. In the meantime, I put up several links about what's happening in Zug, Switzerland outside of Zurich. Switzerland is making a very serious effort to become a leader in Bitcoin. As I said before, you know, you can buy a Swiss Federal Railway ticket with Bitcoin and top up your Bitcoin wallet. I doubt you can do that at Amtrak. I put several links about the role of Zug, which is a low-tax area, and the related foundations that are being used to basically try and make Switzerland one of the capitals of Bitcoin. A lot of attention was drawn to the role of Zug and the Swiss foundations when one of the ones created from the largest ICO is now running into trouble. It's a very big time in China. Xi Jinping's big moment. The Chinese president kicked off the biggest and most watched event in China's political calendar, which is the National Congress of the Communist Party of China. The Economist just had a very huge spread on the president and announced that he's the most powerful man in the world. One of the things that's stressed, and I saw this in Hong Kong, is the extent to which the Communist Party is trying to assert a more involved role within business. And Xi Jinping is said to be very concerned about what happened in Russia in the 90s and the extent to which sort of oligarchs took over and got too big for their britches and really participated in the destruction of the civic and common life, creating massive inequality, etc. Now, I would argue it was Harvard and the U.S. intelligence agencies were deep partners in the process. But, you know, whatever happened, he's watching both what happened in Russia, the rape of Russia, and he's watching what's going on in the United States, and he wants to make sure that that doesn't happen in China. But at the same time, it's having a very chilling effect on business in Hong Kong. I could see and feel it there is that sort of the Chinese Communist Party moved in. So this kind of meeting is a huge planning exercise. It'll be very interesting to see what's coming out of it. There's no doubt that the Chinese are managing quite a difficult situation, particularly when you have AI and automation coming that could threaten jobs, because that's a very large population. And the Chinese have depended on exports to Europe and the United States to keep that population employed. And now you're going to need far more consumer demand from Asia itself to sort of rebalance and make more self-sufficient. Anyway, so they have quite a balancing act, but at the same time, the tricky line is where's the division between business and government, and how do you keep the business sector dynamic without creating the kind of oligarch problem that Russia had. Steve Mnuchin announced this week that the stock market will tank without tax reform. Everybody knows it, but having the Secretary of Treasury say it, and in fact, we've seen in the past, we believe, flash crashes in the market really specifically designed to scare Congress into going along with this, passing this law or that law. The president is in the process of interviewing candidates for the chairmanship of the Fed. Yellen is not an automatic renewal. And what's interesting is one of the Mnuchin's favorite candidate is none other than Jerome Powell, which is an old colleague of mine from Dillon Reed. And it's interesting to watch because Powell is basically a Brady guy. Brady was the chairman of Dillon Reed and then became Secretary of the Treasury. Brady went to Yale. So did his friend George H.W. Bush. So did Mnuchin. Bush and Mnuchin were in Skull and Bones together. And so it's very interesting to see Mnuchin, Skull and Bones pushing pushing Powell, and I suspect it's coming from the Bush-Brady line, one way or the other. What's interesting is when the money started to go missing at HUD and DOD, suddenly money was pouring into Carlyle Group, including a big China fund and Asia private investment funds. And I kept thinking, where are they getting all this money? You know, so money's disappearing from HUD and DOD, and then voila, Carlyle has massive amounts of money along with some other firms. And what's interesting is Powell got moved into Carlyle in 1997, just as the money was going missing from HUD and landing at Carlyle. It was very interesting. You almost wonder if he wasn't placed there for part of that play. Definitely if my theory is correct that Carlyle was helping to launder some of the money. That's just a theory. I could no more prove it. I couldn't prove it in a court of law, but, well, give me subpoena power, and it'd be interesting to see what I could prove. Anyway, so now Powell's at the Fed, but he's said to be Mnuchin's top pick for the New York Fed chairman to replace Yellen. Now, if you look at his filings when he first was appointed to the Fed, Powell's net worth at that time totaled, after being a Carlyle Group partner, his net worth totaled on the form anywhere from $21 to $72 million, which tells me helping to launder the missing money was very delicious business financially. But I find it very interesting that somebody who I believe was implicated by the missing money is being promoted by the Yale guys to go into the Fed at this time. Now Cohen was a leader in engineering those flows as well at Goldman, because Goldman was the real sort of major genius behind figuring out how to suppress the gold price and bubble the housing market. Problem is, you know, he's too obvious, having been at Goldman Sachs, and there's been too much tension between him and the president, so I think it's not going to be Cohen. But everywhere you turn, what you're seeing is people who made all their bones in the financial coup stealing and laundering taxpayers' money. Now, that's my opinion. I can't prove it, but it doesn't smell good. But between if Powell goes in as chairman at the Fed, we're just the whole missing money team is going to be there. Las Vegas, we're watching more and more videos and witnesses come out. Clearly, there were multiple shooters. It was not one shooter. Clearly, the official story makes no sense. The unanswered questions keep piling up. My favorite was from our teammate James Quaid this week when he said, "Where was the Mandalay security team? Let's face it, on a good day, they could take out Portugal," meaning, you know, at the casinos, you have pretty amazing security and pretty sophisticated security. One subscriber pointed out that the top five floors of the Mandalay Bay are owned by a Saudi prince and Bill Gates. So, you know, if you look at who's swinging around there and how much money there is, you're talking about pretty significant security teams. And the fact that they just didn't show up and seemed to disappear, all very strange. One of the survivors who claimed that there was multiple gunmen involved in the shooting was found dead last week. And that's made quite a noise. Apparently she was talking on social media about putting together a group that was going to, you know, people who'd been there was going to figure out what was going on. Anyway, what we've had, you've heard me talk about whiteout before, about having scandals that white out the real news and the real things they don't want you to hear about, like the missing money, like what's really happened in Las Vegas. So a lot of these things are being whited out. And one of the things whiting things out is the Harvey Weinstein scandal. I won't talk about it because we discussed it last week. But now we have, clearly Weinstein was not enough to white out what needed to be whited out, particularly what's going on in California and Las Vegas. So instead, what we now have is the Uranium One deal is back. For those of you who were subscribers during the campaign, the New York Times did a very serious treatment, a very really a fine piece of investigative journalism about the fact that the Russians bought 20% of the U.S. uranium stock, and that deal was approved by Clinton and Eric Holder and the Obama administration. If you look at how the money worked and how much money was then kicked back or laundered into the Clinton Foundation and money to Bill Clinton to make a speech, you know, the whole thing stinks to high hell. I can't fathom that if you did a proper investigation, you wouldn't have indictments flying of Holder, Clinton, even theoretically Obama. And it's interesting, you see incredible unfairness around this. Trump and had a press conference with the head of Puerto Rico today, who he was meeting with. And at the end of the press conference, somebody asked him a question about the Uranium One story, and he gave a reasonably good response. And then I found out about it when the headline was, Trump goes on a bizarre Oval Office rant about what he calls the real Russia story. It wasn't a rant. He just answered the question. And it's interesting, one of the things he said was that the Uranium One deal is a huge scandal, and it is a huge scandal. And it's a perfect example of sort of a pay-for-play network, which is what I think the Clinton Foundation was. Now, how serious is the Uranium One scandal for Hillary Clinton? It's not a good sign, because what it shows, you know, Weinstein is being used as whiteout because he's expendable. And if they start using Clinton for whiteout, it means she's potentially expendable. Now, if you look at what they've done so far, you know, it's going to be a lot of noise. It'll be painful to a reputation, but, you know, you're not talking about indictments, even though Grassley says he's investigating in the Congress and Sessions says he's investigating it at Department of Justice. But the reality is, if they're willing to start down this road, if they really need to, it means they'll go all the way. And sure enough, Clinton could get indicted and go to jail. Now, it's just too early to tell if this turns serious or not. But if you look at the facts, they're all there to turn it serious if somebody wants to. And I suspect it really depends on how much weight out they need. You know, if you look at what's going on for the last two, four, 6 weeks, you know, they could have serious need for much greater whiteout. Now, under the category, you just can't make this stuff up, the CIA is asking Trump to delay making Kennedy assassination documents public. So, you know, we're talking about many decades since 1963. And so at a certain period of time, these documents are supposed to automatically be made available, but the CIA is asking Trump to delay. Now, David Talbot has already solved the mystery of what happened, I believe. And I would really encourage, if you haven't read his book or listened to the interview we did with him on the Salieri Report, it's just a mind-bending, discussion, but I think he's really nailed the story. And the reality is the CIA has a lot to hide. So it looks like they're going to get Trump to help them hide it for some more time. Our hero this week, I had an interesting experience. I was having lunch with Dr. Mark Skidmore and a guest. Again, Dr. Mark Skidmore is the professor from Michigan State University, has been doing such an incredible job on the missing money and wrote the report. And he and his students went into the DOD and had documents and sort of tallied up the total undocumentable adjustments since 1998 for the two agencies, which is what generated the $21 trillion in undocumentable adjustment. Anyway, so this is a man who in his life, if you look at what he's doing, what he's teaching, his scholarship, or in his personal life, you know, this is a man who's accomplished a great deal and is doing something very real and important on the missing money. Anyway, so our guest made the mistake of making what I call the no one faux pas. Why is no one doing anything? And so I kind of bit his head off and said, well, wait a minute. You know, you're sitting across from Dr. Mark Skidmore. He's doing plenty. What are you doing? Anyway, I bring that up because again and again, what I hear is people defining their heroes as the people who are anointed by the institutions who are centralizing political power. This is a very important phenomena because think of, this is the equivalent, I said this to Dr. Skidmore, you know, how could we have won World War II if the American soldiers would only obey General Bradley or General Patton on the days that Hitler said nice things about them? So you don't let the people who are trying to kill you appoint your leaders and define your heroes. You have to define your heroes as the people who are really serving and representing and supporting you and, you know, and bringing life into your situation, not bringing death into your situation. And unfortunately, many of us are still basically looking to the fake news to affirm who we are and who our heroes are. It's interesting, after I left Washington, I drove up to Chester County, I drove up to Pennsylvania and spent some time with my bankers at the National Bank in Malvern. Here you got great, honest bankers. They're running a great community bank. They've stuck to their knitting for decades, you know, and they've been really successful despite, you know, swimming in a sea of corruption, and they're heroes. But they don't think of themselves that way. They just turtle forward. So here's the reality. There are tremendous numbers of heroes around. I see them everywhere. And it's critical in our lives that we start to acknowledge and support the real heroes instead of the ones that the fake news anoint. Because remember, who, if they're anointed by the fake news, in most cases, they're not working in our best interests. Okay, let's go to the movies. I wanted to just say a few words about Game of Thrones. It was something I had started to watch a long time ago. It's a TV series that just finished its seventh season. It's basically a mythological world. It's basically about power politics and war in a mythological world. And it's pretty violent and very gruesome. I'd started to watch it when it first came out. Thought it wasn't particularly interesting and set it aside. And then when I was in Iceland, I asked what had caused the tourism boom, and they said, you know, Game of Thrones. So I thought, how could a TV series, you know, basically cause one of the biggest tourism rushes ever? And so I started to check it out and look at it more. What's interesting is we live in a society where force really is the basis of control. But because we've been at peace within North America for so long until recently, and because there have been so many control systems layered in front of that force, many people are really not aware of the extent to which, you know, violence is present, whether directly or indirectly, or the system depends on violence. So, and interestingly enough, Game of Thrones really cuts through all the niceties and takes you deep down into looking and understanding the, you know, a world maintained with physical force. It was interesting, before 9/11, I had a colleague who was a very successful investment banker, had gone to Harvard Business School, who used to tell me the popsicle index was a really stupid idea and made no sense. For those of you who've never heard the popsicle index, it's my indicator for the quality and well-being of a place. And it's the percentage of people in a place who believe a child can leave their home, go to the nearest place to buy a popsicle, and come home alone safely. So this investment banker would say, you know, this is really stupid. Why would anybody care about this? And then after 9/11, she came to me and said, you know, now I understand the popsicle index. Because in fact, she could now contemplate a world where she might not be physically safe. Now, you know, a lot has gone, there's a lot of water under the bridge since 9/11. So we've had, you know, endless false flags, mob wars. Now we have the attack in Las Vegas and the firebombing of California. I dare say we're coming out of the trance of many decades of peace and feeling safe in North America. Interestingly enough, one of the most sort of unique features of Game of Thrones is you have different families and factions fighting for power in the in what's called the Seven Kingdoms, and the, you know, sort of the subtext is you need one dominant group to get together and consolidate the whole thing, and then you can be at peace. It's sort of like give a central control of the whole planet in a new world order, and finally you'll get peace. Not a theory, I believe, but that's sort of the idea promoted. Anyway, the one of the contenders for the throne is a woman. She's a queen who has the loyalty of three dragons, and she can fly these dragons around, but the dragons can basically shoot flames and basically firebomb any boat, any village, any place, a group of people. And it's the ultimate competitive edge in warfare is if you have dragons flying around who are loyal to you that can firebomb from the sky. And I must say there are a lot of parallels between watching the dragons fly around and achieve military victory with what we're watching in California. Our interview is the part two with that wonderful Dr. Joseph Farrell. This is the section where we talk about culture. So last week we did geopolitics and economics, and this week we talk about all the remaining topics, including culture. Make sure you access our news trends and stories in the web presentation, because Joseph and I decided we were just going to focus on the most important things instead of going through all the trends and stories, which we usually try and do. But the news has gotten so explosive that I think it's very important when we do these discussions that we really focus on the essence of what happened during the quarter that was the most important. Okay, ask Catherine. A lot of good questions today. Hi, Catherine. Do you have recommendations for the best places to store precious metals, primarily silver? Ideally, I'd like to keep it in my possession, but don't feel comfortable having large amounts at my residence. In your opinion, what are the top three places to store physical precious metals? Thank you. I have not done a recent full search, but here are the ones that I currently recommend. Any really good Swiss bank is fine, particularly if you put it in your own safe deposit box there. But you may need a certain minimum to get an account open, and that may be more than an inconvenience along with the travel. You may want it close to you in North America. Das Safe in Vienna is another one that you can, they have a website up, DAS, new word, SAFE, and I'd recommend, so those would be my two picks in Europe. In the United States, CNT Depository in Massachusetts is one that Franklin Sanders has had very good experience with and recommends, and then Fidelitrade in Delaware, BMG Bullion in Canada. Rob Kirby is one of the people who represents BMG. Now, some of those require that you buy precious metals to be custodian there, others don't. I'm certainly comfortable with a good safe deposit box and a good community bank or credit union that's near you. Some people don't trust the banking system. What I would say is I think if there's real reason to be concerned, you'll probably have a good chance to get it out. We have a great interview with Dan Perkins of Hidden Safe in Memphis, and it may be worth it to you to get Hidden Safe to come out and build safes that, you know, your local burglar really can't find. Hi, Catherine. I know you're doing a pension fund overview in a couple of months and found several articles you may find interesting. California recently increased gasoline and car registration taxes for, quote, street improvements, but my guess is to shore up CalPERS. We already had an 8% sales tax and a carbon global warming tax on every gallon of gas. We are already a dollar per gallon higher than Arizona, all in state taxes, and we're very car dependent here. Between CalPERS and CalSTRS, that's the teacher's fund, For about 2 million families currently receiving benefits, and probably more than that number, are not expecting to receive future benefits. Who are expecting to receive future benefits? My guess is that this is not going to end well. Personally, I'm moving to Texas next year. Well, that's how my relatives got to Texas during the Civil War. It was called Gone to Texas. They were trying to move far enough west to get away from the war. Hi, Catherine. I don't remember a time when we've had so many unnatural disasters, hurricanes with 51 inches of rain, Harvey, then Irma in Florida, then Puerto Rico getting destroyed by two hurricanes, then the huge fires in Northern California. They say 5,200 homes destroyed. The latest I've read is 7,500 homes and businesses. And now a hurricane hitting Ireland. Then the Vegas massacre and all the weird stories of disappearances, witness murders, erased cell phones, and sheriff acting really stressed with the always present FBI close by. Now it's Harvey Weinstein everywhere, which seemed to kill the Vegas follow-up. Why do you think the Weinstein story is front and center, since everyone knows this has been going on for many, many years? As I said, it's white out. So I think the sort of global 3.0 types think that Weinstein is 2.0. He's expendable. And so they're using him to try and, you know, having a Harvey Weinstein scandal and having him being investigated by the NYPD, the LAPD, Scotland Yard, the Department of Justice. All of that is very juicy. Now, I don't think it's been sufficient white out given what's going on, and that's why I think we're seeing the Uranium One deal come back up with the Clintons. You have a whole part of the heartland that's ready to just, you know, they would go into a state of great political excitement if they thought Clinton was going to be, there's any chance she was going to be indicted. Now, I don't think, you know, they'll use this for white out, but they don't need to indict Clinton unless the need for white out gets even stronger than it is now. I really think that Bush's scream about conspiracy theories and fabrication is he sees what's going on in Washington and the way Trump's handling things to really be opening up cracks and letting the light in a way that is really threatening to him and Obama. I think the Uranium One deal opens up way too many cracks that could go into both of them. So they're really worried that, you know, that they've got serious personal liability, both their wealth and the, you know, their legal liability. So, and the reader continues, things are accelerating, and I think we're definitely through the looking glass. Love your insights and leadership. Then the next one is very long. I'm not going to read it. You can read it in the notes. But someone in Florida is asking for protection for a doctor at a wellness institute who's done a remarkable job of healing him and many other people. And he's very concerned because we've had, over the last two years, we've had 70 natural health doctors die mysteriously or clearly be assassinated or murdered. And so I think he's very concerned about the safety of this doctor and the people around him. So I will definitely keep you and the doctor in my prayers. My recommendation, though this is going to sound harsh, is I would get out of Florida. I just don't think Florida is safe when you're in this, you know, when you've got this kind of clinic or institute. I know it's a very big job to move a successful business like that. But I just think you're going to have to get to friendlier territory. Now, I say that without knowing a lot of the specifics of your situation. But again, I would not stay in Florida. I think it's the most dangerous state in the country. And what I don't know how to advise you is if there's another, well, there's certainly many states that would be better. But you also may be better off going to Cuba or someplace in Latin America, which is more tolerant of successful natural medicine. The other thing I would say is you absolutely need spiritual protection. I think it's quite remarkable the people who are protected from impossible amount of danger when they have angelic protection. I don't know, or I can tell, I think you know how to invite in that protection, but I would continue to stress doing so. So Please feel free, if you have more questions, to send them in to Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. In your latest podcast, you postulated that maybe the mayors and local government officials were being threatened to encourage them to go along with something, or their towns could also be hit by directed energy weapons. I think California SB 649 is your answer. Also, as to Vegas events, as you remember on 9/11, there were many multiple drills running at the same time. The MO appears to be the same drills plus live action, which caused the slow response and confusion. Keep up your great work. God bless you. Let me see if there was one other question. One person did send in a form that was from Dickinson, Texas. I think that is in the Galveston area. It was a grant application on the municipality's website. So I read it on the municipality's website. And it was a grant application for homeowners to apply for grants to help them remediate the harm done by the housing. So presumably, you know, if your house had been harmed, you could get this grant and fix up your house, etc. So this is the application, and the thing that was unbelievably strange about it is it required you on the application to agree that you didn't boycott Israel, and for the term of this agreement that you would not boycott Israel, which I have to tell you, seeing that in a Texas municipal government document as a requirement, I'm tempted to call them and ask them if it was a federal requirement, how in the world it got in there. It's quite remarkable. Okay, that's it for this week. I'm back next week with Equity Overview and Rambus Blockbuster Chartology. That's the third week in our third quarter wrap-up. The financial charts are up on the web presentation now. There's no money in markets next week. I will be at the Metropolitan Opera for two nights, both Tales of Hoffman on Tuesday and then Laboheim on Friday. So I'm going to be having a wonderful time in New York. And then November 2nd, the last week of our third quarter wrap-up, Control 101, I'm going to address head-on how control happens and what that means to you. And as Joseph would say, it's a whopper doozy topic. Anyway, until we speak next week on Equity Overview and Rambus Blockbuster Chartology, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.